Welcome to the Beautiful Butterfly Show, where everyday topics and everyday people come together. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Beautiful Butterfly Show with your host, Bianca Fly.
Everyone to the Beautiful Butterfly Show. I'm your host, Bianca Fly. Want to say happy Tuesday to you guys. Hope you had a fantastic weekend, you guys. I know we're 17 days into the new year, so hopefully you are starting off on the right note and a great note and making 2017 all that you wanted to be and more, you guys. And of course, as always, the Beautiful Butterfly Radio Show is brought to you by no other than YRN 1328, where you can be heard internationally, folks. You've been heard all over the world, from Africa to D.C. to Philly to the U.K., all over. You guys can be heard over here on the Beautiful Butterfly Radio Show. So big shouts out to YRN 1328. And, of course, you guys can download our app to your phone, where you can listen to all of the awesome shows that we offer on the platform. And, of course, you guys, I'm excited. I told you that 2017, we're kicking off great note with some great guests. And tonight we have author of To Live and Die in L.A., Parts 1 and Part 2, and a whole bunch more books as well. Author Terry Roten is in the building, you guys. He's hailing from California, that West Coast love. You guys know I love the West Coast. I feel like I should have been born there for some reason, but I don't know. But anyway, of course, he's joining us on the show tonight, you guys. He's going to share his story with us and all those great things. And he is all, another person I say is always out here grinding. He's trying to help others, be great and be great at what they do. So I'm excited about having him on the show tonight, you guys. So if you're out there, you got a question or a comment from him, or you just want to call in and show him some love, feel free to do that. The number is 347-326-9139 is the number, of course, that you can call in and participate. So I'm not going to delay any longer, you guys. I'm going to bring the man of the hour on here. Terry, you there?
Yes, how you doing? How you doing, Bianca? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm blessed. I can't complain right now.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you for coming out and hanging out with me for a little bit today. I definitely appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So for the folks out there who may not know who you are, tell them a little bit about who is Terry Roten.
My name is Arthur Terry Roten. Well, Terry Roten, I'm from Los Angeles, California. I'm the author of To Live and Die in L.A., To Live in L.A. Part 2, Natural Born Killers, Girl, I Had Enough, Boy, I Had Enough. I have a host of books. I'm also the publisher of No Breaks Publishing, which is a publishing company out here towards the West Coast. And we specialize in urban books, street lit, and hip-hop fiction. And I'm just, I'm also an entrepreneur. I own a couple bookstores out here in Los Angeles, too. But basically, I'm more known for my books.
Wonderful, wonderful. And, of course, I came across you, first of all, of course, on social media, but I saw a story on you where you talked about your time being incarcerated and some of the choices that you made, early on in your youth. And so for you, walk through us a little bit of that, about, you know, that time where, you know, things were just, you know, going, I guess, going left. And how did you make it through that process of being incarcerated and now being out and being an entrepreneur?
Well, I started off in the streets. It was more like out west, especially like in California. You know, they consider that like home of the gangbang or home of the Crips and Bloods.
Right.
Or that's where the Crips and Bloods really originated before it became internationally like gangs and stuff. So I was really born and raised into it, like per se, and like you know certain instances. If you was born around doctors and lawyers, 9 times out of 10. That's what you're going to strive to be. Just so happened I was born in an environment where it was gang heavy, and just so happened at a young age I decided that's what I wanted to partake in, and I found out the hard way that everything glitter ain't gold. And I thought, you know, seeing these guys with the nice cars, fancy cars and gold chains, and I thought that's the life I wanted to live until I realized I got in it. And at the age of 14, the judge sentenced me to over a decade in prison. And I had already been shot 6 times and stabbed in prison and racial riots and stuff like that. So it was more of a point while I was in Pelican Bay Shu. I had caught a battery on a peace officer while I was incarcerated. And they gave me 5 years in the Shu term after the and plus a DA referral. And that's when I realized, I'm getting tired of being in prison. I don't want to live like this. And I just started reading a lot while I was in Shu, because the Shu is segregated housing unit, which they call a cell term, they call that the hole. And so you're in the cell 24 hours a day. Every other day you come out the cell just to shower for about 10 to 15 minutes. So you're in the cell by yourself. And then with me still being a minor at the time when I called my Shu term, I couldn't have no cellie. So I was in the cell for five years straight by myself. So it was either I was going to be mentally stronger or mentally weaker, and that's when I started just like, I told myself, like, I'm not getting off none of the psych meds or none of that. I'm going to be mentally stronger. And I just started writing books, like, just to pass time in books, since I couldn't have no TV or none of that in my cell, and it was just me in isolation. Like, my books became my movies, and by the time I looked up, 1 year then passed, me being isolated by myself 2 years, and that was the way I just entertained myself. And that's how that all came.
And being incarcerated for those, as you say, those first 5 years by yourself, how do you think you came from not being depressed? Because sometimes recent people that I've talked to who have been incarcerated, you know, talk about, you know, there are periods of time where some people get really, truly, truly depressed, you know, when they don't know, you know, how they're going to make it through that sentence. And so for you, like, how did you kind of keep your head above water to say, you know what, I got to stay focused, you know, in order to make it out of here?
Well, like with me, really, like it was a depression environment within itself. So, like it was times I'm not going to sit up here and candy coat it. Like, it was times I sat in that thing and I was depressed. Like, it's like, man, I ain't gonna never make it up out of here. But then there was times I thought about like better for my mom and stuff like that. Like telling me like just stay strong. Like I'm praying for you. Like people praying. I had went back down on the murder charge that I had got charged with, and I got found not guilty. So it was like more of a token that I knew I was coming home. And then like with me writing and stuff, it was like it was a way to create time. Then I just started reading, like, you know, it's a saying like that you have to inherit in prison to get by. And the saying is they can have your body but they can't have your mind. And I posted on one of my social medias not too long ago, dude, he in the prison cell, but he outside the prison cell, and it's like he had a beach somewhere. And that's how you got to start doing it, because other than that, the walls will start talking to you and you will start really losing it. So I told myself, like, I got more to live for than just prison.
Right. Absolutely.
And then,
truthfully,
it was like a, really, it was just a growing point. It's a point in a boy's life where he become a man. And it, like I say, that wasn't my first 5 years. That was really my last 5 years. My first 5 years, I was just in prison, like, acting up, gang banging, like living up, trying to live up to my rep and my name and my street fame and stuff like that. And it went by so fast. But that, after that fifth year, that's when I started to say, man, I don't want this. Like, man, I've been here too long. Like, I want to go home. I need to get home, and I need to stay home. And I just start, like, just start saying a better, like, something just flashed in my head, like, kind of hard to explain. Like, some people get it, and then some people never do get it. I realize, like, even, like, I got older, let's say, homeboys or older associates that still caught up in the street life, and they could old enough to be my father, probably old enough to be almost my grandfather age, and they just, the light ain't popped on. Sometimes it's just a light that pop on. I don't know, right. Like, I don't know what it is, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. And do you think, like, because you mentioned, you know, growing up in a certain type of an environment, and so do you think that kind of played a heavy role on you? Because I don't think, you know, and I always, being in North Carolina I've lived in Georgia, and so a lot of times when I hear gang activity, I always say these people have no idea what gang life is about. You know, they need to take a trip, you know, to the West Coast to see, like, what it's truly, truly about. And so do you feel like growing up, you know, in that type of environment, like, there was no other option besides, you know, turning to the negative? Do you think you had the option to, you know, seek something positive and not get involved in stuff?
I mean, well, I lie and say I didn't, because truthfully, I believe in every tunnel there's some kind of light. Like, I believe, you could be in the darkest place in your life, but it's some kind of light. I believe in every bad there's some kind of good. So, but at that time, at that mind state and that age I was in, I wasn't looking for the maybe like you said, if I would have had that somebody reach out to me, like, in the forms of what I'll be trying to do with some of the youth that I try to keep around me today, and show them. But at that point in time in your mind frame, when you caught up, see, it's a point in time. I was a kid, so it's a point in time in a child's life where he goes through identity crisis, and you got to be able to look at that child and say, is he really destined to be a gangster, or is he just going through identity crisis? And that's how I evaluate, like, myself when I'm trying to reach out and help the kids. See, I was destined to be a gangster because it was in my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, it was in my head. Like, I was already knew this is what I wanted to do. Like I've been seeing, like, all my family up and in it, and even the bad stuff that came without it. And, like I say, like, truthfully, I have an argument with people about this. Like, if gangs is not bad. And don't miss. I know people probably listening and probably say, "What you mean by gangs are not bad?" Gangs are not bad because what the thing of it is, gangs just have negative thoughts and contributes. We was thinking positive as in the form of, let's say, a fraternity. A fraternity to me is just like a gang, but they got positive thoughts, positive vibes, positive energy they putting out into the universe. So gangs, if we was to think positive, all the black males and black sisters that's in gangs, if they was to turn that negative energy and think positive, guess what a gang would be? A gang would be like a fraternity. And it's kind of crazy, but in reality, like, I think gangs are bad because the negative energy that's coming up within and the negative thoughts and the process.
Right.
But if we were talking, if we was to convert gangs into the positive energy and teaching, okay, just for example, my whole philosophy, if I could turn everybody in my gang and show them, like, look, we could do this positive, we could start making movies about how the struggle we live out here, we could start doing this, and everybody doing that, guess what happened? Our gang just became a positive movement. It ain't negative no more. Now our gang is giving back. Our gang is showing something whole different from the negative input, especially with the media and stuff. But in reality, if you think about it, like, going back to what you said about how gangs and widespread, and you tell people to go to the West Coast, it'd be the same thing. The positive impact will make it where everybody will be wanting to do what this gang is doing, the positive.
Right.
But so the sad thing about gangs is that our state of mind.
Right, absolutely. And you mentioned about, you know, speaking to youth. And now, Terry, you know, it's so much that has taken place over the years. You know, now we got social media, you got Facebook, you got Instagram, Snapchat, you name it. You got so many social media outlets, and you got, you know, music. The music out here has changed a little bit. How do you encourage the youth you know, not to get caught up, you know, in as you mentioned earlier, in the glitter, you know, thinking that, okay, if I live this fast life, it's going to lead to me having all this money and this and that and a third. How do you try to inspire and encourage them not to go down the path that you had to go down?
Well, see, it all falls back into what I said. Like, you got to be able to look at a child and know if they're going through identity crisis or if they just need help. Or if they just desperately gangsters. Like certain kids, I just look at them, they got to go through that. They have to go through that trial and tribulation of learning. This is not, if some wake up, some don't. And that's life. Like, I'm sorry to say, in reality, like, I was one of them kids. I had to go through that. Like, I believe prison is the best thing that ever happened to me. And a lot of people, why would you say that? Like, you crazy. But prison the best thing that ever happened to me because I started a clique in my, and from what the neighborhood I'm from and the gang I'm from, within our gang, we was our own gang. We called ourselves the Tiny Little Bastards. That's what To Live in L.A. Part 1 and Part 2 talk about To Live in L.A. 85% of that story is based on my life story. So now, the Tiny Little Bastards, which was our clique, now, to make a long story short, that was our whole little crew, right?
Right.
We was all destined to be gangsters. Now, there was a couple of us that wasn't destined like that. They just grew up with us and they fell in, but really they fell out. But what I say by why I say prison is the best thing that ever happened to me. Now, out my crew, it was probably like 100 of us. And, like, now I'm out here alive and still breathing and free. It's only like one or two of us, me and probably one or two of my other friends that we grew up with. So nothing good came from out of it. Like, I'll be feeling like even though I'm still young, I'm a last of a dying breed. So that was the impact of all that. Like, it was nothing good came about that, and we was all destined. So to be that, it's the ones who wasn't somehow simmered out. You kind of get what I'm saying? And that's how you gotta be with these kids or these even I tell parents, like, you gotta look at your child and know and look at them in the eyes. And if you know in your soul, even if you don't want to accept it, that this kid is about to be a gangster, you got to help him. Because if you don't help him and not help him by badgering, this is not what you're going to do. Because if it's in his mind, he's going to do that. Guess what? 9 times out of 10, guess what he's going to do? He's going to do that. Because my mom, my mom was the best single mom that I know. But when it came to my head that this is what I wanted to do, and she tried her best, even though my mom was caught up in the streets and my dad was caught up in the streets, what happened is it made me rebel against them, and it made me not come home. And then when I not came home, that made me have to figure out and learn the street life even more.
Right.
But and after a while, then my mom adapted to him, like, I got to help my son. Okay, what I got to do? She started trying to figure out, okay, my son already in the streets. I don't want him to die out here. So as a mom, I got to figure out what I need to do to help him not die in these streets.
Right.
And most parents don't understand. They panic, learning that their child is caught up in something that they don't approve of, and they get on this child, and this child is already destined for that, and they run that child further into the game, into the life. It's kind of like reverse psychology. You have to use with that method when the child is caught up. Now you look at some kids. Oh, he's just going through identity crisis. One day today he want to be a gangster. Tomorrow he want to be a rapper. This day he want to be an artist. Okay, we know. Okay, we can work with him. But then some children, you just got to let them go through that struggle. I had to go through that struggle and learn. Some of them make it out, some of them don't. And I'm just so happy, like I said, I was blessed to make it out. And don't get me wrong, I can't say make it out because I still be caught up in it, but it's a cycle. It's a cycle that you have to kick. It's like an addiction. It's like a crack addict. Like, you just can't put crack in front of a crack addict and expect him not to hit that crack.
Right.
So it's a cycle. You got to rehabilitate. The street life is an addiction within itself, and a lot of people don't understand that.
Absolutely. And once again, you guys, we are on with author Terry Roten, you guys, right here on the Beautiful Butterfly Show. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back with more, you guys. I see a lot of you guys are definitely digging his interview tonight. So don't be afraid. You can call in and talk to him live. The number is 347-326-9139. Now you have to just press 1, and we'll bring you on the line, you guys. So we're going to take a little break.
And we're going to come back, you guys, with more right here on the Beautiful Butterfly Show.
Hey, everybody. How y'all doing? This is Lyrics Brown, author of The Loyal to the Hustle Series 1 and 2, also author of The Devil's Calling Card 1, 2, and 3, all available on Amazon. And when I'm not writing, I'm listening to Bianca Fly here on The Beautiful Butterfly Show. Y'all be easy.
Of the author Trent Williams of www.taylorkennedymedia.com. Chapter of the Delta gives us a peek at his life-changing events. And if that's not enough, Trent tells you more about his brothers and his life through memoirs in his book, The Four Horsemen. His blogs and daily stimulating quotes are published in his book, Life's Little Addiction. And when you have a need of some human coaching of life and relationships, take a look at Conversations with Trent, Volume 1 and 2, and Conversations with Trent, Limited Edition. You will find his works available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all online book retailers.
And welcome back, everyone, to the Beautiful Butterfly Show. I'm your host, Bianca Fly, and we are on with author Terry Roten this evening, you guys, and we have been discussing his journey through life before he created his own destiny, you guys, and that's his publishing company entitled No Breaks. And so tell the folks out here, Terry, how did No Breaks actually come about? What did the thoughts and the vision for actually come about?
No Breaks honestly came back how we was talking about, like, the whole negative attributes of gangs and mm-hmm. my prior lifestyle of how, what I really led and, you know, how I just was, you know, an active gang member. So, like, the gang I was in, we used to, like, my crew, we used to always stand, like, moving with No Breaks. So that was, like, part of our crew. Like, we was reckless with No Breaks, like, moving with No Breaks. We didn't care. We was full-fledged active. We gave all our energy to this gang and what we had to do and did what we did with No Breaks. I said, in prison, I knew, like, okay, so when I was leaked, by the time to get out of prison, I was coming about this time, the books that I read, I told you I was in school. So I said, what I want to start my own publishing company, because the West, it ain't any publishing company, it ain't no authors out. All in books, my books, we lit books, are from the East. Every book that we have goes from my wife, Hart, John, was no web author. So myself come up with my own.
Your
at that time,
your phone cutting in and out, Terry.
Was studying in prison where I put my on my own income, but I don't to start. I signed while I was in. I ended up while I was in. Soak as up as much. Knowledge as I like at that time, and I'll tell you my past, like, do get what I to get by prison, like sales and just stuff like so. It's called buddy stuff. So I can't, I'm publishing for my I'm gonna publish, you know, my I do it.
Terry,
I'm a dentist,
your,
so West Coast authors. But I didn't have a name for the company. So I said, damn, everywhere I go within prison, like the homies, you know, we still in touch. I'm still in touch. I'm not going to get on here and say that, you know, I wasn't messing with my homeboys, my gang or none of that while I was in prison. So we start with say moving no breaks. So I, all right, homie, no breaks. So we just started saying no breaks, moving no breaks. I'm sitting in the cell. I said, no breaks. Matter of fact, we're going all gas, no breaks. This publishing, we're going to take over the world with this. We're all gas, no breaks. No matter what, we're going full throttle with it. We ain't stopping. Can't nobody stop us. And they're going to hear us authors on the West Coast. And that's how I felt. So that's where No Breaks came from. So I took some negative, and like I said, and turned it to positive where I said the whole gang where I tried to get at the theory about gangs turning from negative into positive. So that's where the whole thing come from, No Breaks Publishing, because that was something that I used to push in my younger days, moving with No Breaks. We was going all gas, No Breaks and full throttle with that. On the negative aspect, I said, if I put this positive movement, and I'm going to go all gas, no brakes the same way, because whatever I do in life, I feel I give it my all. And that's how No Breaks
and, one of the questions we have from a listener, Derek, he wanted to know, once you were no longer incarcerated, did you find yourself having to kind of separate yourself from some of the, maybe some of the older people that you used to hang around with when you did get in trouble? So did you kind of have to disassociate with certain people, or were you able to just go back with no issues?
No, it was, see, the crazy part about it, this which a lot of people are going to laugh at me about, after doing my 10 and a half years and I did all that preaching that I'm not coming back to prison, I ended up right back in prison about a year or two later for a gun charge. I had to learn that I was still rattling the fence. See, one thing about addiction, it ain't easy to kick. Like I told y'all, the streets is just an addiction. It ain't easy to kick. So, and then I'm going back. I have to parole. See, the system puts you back into the bucket that you came. They put you right back in that hole. So I had to parole, and to where I came from. So they put a crackhead back in the crack house, and left the dope right there next to him for him to keep smoking. And that's what happened to me. They put me back in my environment because they told me I couldn't go nowhere because I'm on parole and they got to watch me. They got to monitor me for 3 years. And since this is where I caught my crime at, this is where I need to go back at. That's why the recidivism rate is so high. People re-enter back to prison so high because they put me back into an environment where all they know. And if all they know is to go, to go get it how they live, they ain't got no outside resources but from what they know. And that's what happened. I went back to my same environment and got back under my friends. And by the time I looked up, I'm back partying, I'm back hanging, I'm back thugging. And I'm back carrying a gun on my waist because I had a name for myself. And next thing I know, I'm on parole still, and the police could pull me over. They could do whatever they want when you steal a number, and I'm back in prison. So to answer the question, it wasn't hard. But see, now that I'm out, I had to reevaluate myself as a man. I still associate with some of my friends, my old friends, or some of my old associates, but I got to know as a man, I got to have discipline. I can't be in the hood on the block. I got to lead a block. I got to come. I got to know idle time is the devil's workshop. So I have to understand that I got kids. I got other bigger things. And if a person, your true friend, he going to tell you, yeah, man, it's not for you. You on some other stuff. Let's ride with you for this. Because at the same token, they got a post that they be posting. I just posted about jail earlier. A person could say, and I don't excuse my French, a person could say, oh, you my boy, you my aunt, you my nigga, you my boy. But in reality, and I'll ride and I'll kill for you. But with that same person, you a ride and kill for going to be at that court date with you after you ride and kill for them. You ain't going to see them in court. Is that person going to send you a suit? No. So in reality, I had to man up and tell myself, like, look, it's either me or it's either my kids or it's either this or it's either that. It's only hard if you don't know how to discipline yourself. But as a man now, I'm disciplining myself. See, I was a kid back then, and when I go to them kid stages, sometimes, like I said, it's addiction. So to make a long story short, it's like yes and no. You just got to have discipline. You got to discipline yourself. It's like temptation.
And that's interesting because, you know, a lot of times I would assume most people don't think that, wow, that you could be addicted, you know, to being out there. But I can understand it, you know, being out there and you're used to doing what you please, you know, get what you want, you know, and going right back out there towards that temptation, you know, it's easy to get sucked in and so forth. And so now you're out. How does Terry keep from going back? How do you strive every day to keep from going back to where you were?
Well, the good thing that I could say, like, now I got blessings in my life. Now I got people who depend on me. See, back then, I didn't have no dependence. I didn't have nothing to lose. I didn't care. So nowadays, I got a lot to lose, and I got two little girls and a little boy who look up to me. At the end of the day, all they know is daddy. All they know right. is daddy gonna make it home tonight. So like I remember like even not even on the gangsta, I remember just like, man, my crew used to be so wild. We'd go get a stolen car and be doing 100 miles per hour down a residential street. Don't care. Now I get in the car.
Wow.
If a person going to look, slow down, bro. I gotta get home with my kids. Like so.
Yeah.
So now it's about I understand life now. I understand that life is a beautiful thing. And I also understand, like I say, not let go to the next level. Like, with no breaks, it's starting to get so big, whereas I got authors who remind me of me. And even though I'm only a few years older than them, or they a few years older than me, they still respect me and believe in me so much to let me guide them in their career and their path of probably helping them better their life and support their kids. So it's like, I got too much to lose to let everybody down. It's just like, for example, you having me on your show, that means you see something in me where I said, Terry got something. And if I was to fall back in this situation, it's like, damn, I let you down too.
Right. And for you, and speaking of you having a son, it's a lot of things that definitely have been going on in the news, in the media, when it comes to just our black men in general. So what kind of things do you share with your son, and what advice do you give fathers out here who have sons on raising a son in America here in 2017?
Well, like the best advice I could give them is just you got to raise your child with the gift of understanding. And the gift of understanding means you have to tell your child, first of all, being a black man is you at the bottom of the totem pole. Being a black man, even though we had a black president, is one of the hardest things to do in the world, not just America, in the world. In America, just make it harder because we're at the bottom of the totem pole. But being that you have melanin in your skin, even like in Australia, they don't call them Australians. They call them Aboriginals. So it's something different. You kind of get it's just something about that melanin. So you could just say America, but in reality, just being a black human, a person of melanin in a system is already, I guess, since you're the dominant figure, you already looked upon downwardly because they already think you're superior. But not even to touch on that type of stuff. Like, I'll tell my son, like, in reality, like, you got to understand, like, you're against all odds. And when you're against all odds, it's because a few years ago, our women was against it. Now, our women surpassed us males because, and this might sound crazy, but I'm going to say in the inner cities, women surpassed our males because now they're getting equal rights, and now our black women is the roles and switch where these guys feel they the women and the women feel they the men. I don't understand it, but if you look at it, that's what's really happening out here. And the point probably being is because, you know, we didn't got caught up in these cycles of what this fast life, looking at these celebrities and think that's the life that we want to live and all that shit and all this crazy stuff where we getting records, it's hard to get jobs, and our sisters getting these books and they ain't scared to go to school and they ain't scared to get out their comfort zone and they striving and they building, and that's the strong black woman. So in reality, the sisters getting the good jobs and all that stuff. Where the black males, we either getting reincarcerated, we killing each other, we dying, the police killing us, and it's like it's a lose-lose battle for us. So as a black man, to the next black man or to my son, I just had to tell him off top, you fighting an uphill battle. Only thing you can do, son, is strive and keep striving for betterment. That's the only thing I'll be able to say, to be honest with you. And it's the choices you make.
Absolutely. And we have a caller on the line here, area code 346, last digit 6239. State your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Reginald. I'm calling from Houston, Texas. How are you doing this evening?
We're doing good, Reginald. We are on with author Terry Rowan. You got a question or comment for him?
Well, I'm sitting here in the studio, and I felt like my head was about to explode listening to this conversation for the past 15 minutes. It's very rare that I say my age, but I will say my age. I'm 51, and I was born and raised in South Central Los Angeles, surrounded by gangs. I grew up in that environment. Had a lot of good friends that were their lives were taken by gang violence, selling dope and doing other mischievous things. I think the thing that bothers me more than anything else is that the lack of accountability that we take, that we don't take on ourselves. It's very easy, and we make it very simplistic, where we say, okay, it's like knowing the game Monopoly. We know how the game is being set up. We know how the game is structured. If we already know how the game is structured, it's our responsibility to say, you know what, we all have a choice on what we choose to do. My thing is this, I could never comprehend on why I should be afraid to live in my community, not afraid of an Anglo-Saxon, not afraid of the law enforcement. I grew up in one of the worst areas, had the worst, one of the worst law enforcement communities in the state as far as LAPD. I grew up in that environment. And I was more terrified of a brother with the same complexion as me, worried about drive-by shootings. And I said, I never could understand that, why we had this kind of self-destructive mentality towards one another. I also heard you speak upon when you were released and you made a promise to yourself that you weren't going back and you got incarcerated again, and you, as you said, you made the comparison as far as being a drug fiend. I look at it from this aspect. At the end of the day, your brother listening to you, you're a very intelligent young brother. And what I would say to you is this, as I've always, and I told my son, I have a 15-year-old son, anything you do in life is about choices. We have the choice, we have a decision to make on how we choose as far as the path we choose in our life. I just wish we as black people would stop blaming Anglo-Saxons for all our problems. What takes place in our communities is our responsibility. As far as the women are concerned, women have had to play the man and the woman role. Because 9 times out of 10, most women have to play daddy and mommy because they're being raised, they're raising kids in a single-parent home. So they're taking on that kind of responsibility. So they got to get out there and work. When I grew up, I had a mom and a dad, married for 40-some-odd years before they passed away. Mom was a homemaker. She took care of the house. Dad was out there working, making money for the household. Again, I was surrounded by gangs, but I had a choice. It was either go right here.
Reginald, you know, the whole thing about that, what you just said, if you're 51, right, because I've been a gang expert and I'm talking this field and I've toured, like, different states, and you're right. But see, the whole thing, I look at the generational gap. Within, when you, your time frame of growing up, the 60s and the 70s, the black family was stronghold still from the civil rights movement. The black stronghold was, the black family was known for a two-parent household. By the time the 80s came, the Ronald Reagan era and cracks came, it divided the black family, brother. It divided the black family so much, whereas you had the black male stealing from the black mother, the black mother and the black child to provide for a crack addiction that he couldn't kick and get the monkey off the back. And it was vice versa for the black woman stealing from the black male. And it divided that black family, whereas nowadays in the era that I came up in, we was what we called the crack baby era. And we came from single parents and single mothers who really had to get out there, like you said, the roles and switch. So now the crack era didn't go on. Now there's another era that's coming up under us, and whereas it's still domino effect where the 90% of the black family is single-parent household, where when it was in the 60s and the 70s, when you was coming up, 90% of the black family was a two-parent household. Do you see the domino effect? And so what happened is when a male don't got no person of, off top of the black race is already, we come from where we don't have no culture. We don't know where we come from. So a male who don't know where he come from don't know where he. So even if you don't got a father to look up to or a person to look up to, you're gonna go towards the street. There's a difference. It was a different geo back then from when you was coming up. I was coming up in this new generation. When they come in, it's going to be different from mine. You kind of get to understand that where I'm.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I just want to respond to that as far as the Reagan era and the crack era. Here's the thing. When Ronald Reagan took office, that's when you had the Latchkey program come in because you were forcing mothers to go out and work. Before, if you had a mother, mother was staying at home, father was able to go out and generate an income and provide for his family. But when he came into office, it took away the middle class. It was only two sectors of people. You were either rich or you were poor. So it forced the mother to go out in the workforce and work. So now you had the Latchkey program develop. What I'm saying is this. At the end of the day, if you go in your kitchen, and you turn on your stove, you know that stove is hot, and your son is going over there to get something out there, and you're already letting him know from Jump Street, if you go touch that stove without gloves or you're not prepared for it, you're going to burn yourself. At the end of the day, you can inform, you can teach, you can educate, but it comes down to a choice. I definitely understand what you're saying as far as the crack here. As I said, I grew up in that sector. I lost a lot of friends, a lot of good friends to that. I have friends now that have been incarcerated for over 30-some-odd years. I mean, in third-level secure, maximum security. So I understand, but at the end of the day, by me growing up in that environment, I had a choice. My father passed away when I was 12 years old, so it was just me and my mother. But at the end of the day, I had a choice to make. Was I going to choose to take that path that I know that was going to end up me being another a statistic in this system, or was I going to choose to make something out of myself? And I feel as a man and as a father like yourself, you're the blueprint. You're the blueprint of how your child or your children are going to turn out. Because without a blueprint, there's no strong foundation. Again,
okay,
I
respect that. Now, listen, so if you come from a blueprint of destruction and you come from a blueprint of uneducated black males and women, where do you start to break the cycle at?
That's a damn good question. Where do you start to break the cycle? Again, by you being educated as you are. One thing we all have in common, we know the difference between what's wrong.
Listen to this. You heard you said that I educated. Now, this might be with God, or it might be a higher being, or whatever you believe in. It might take me to go to prison to educate myself, because within my family traits, we are, like, I'm the first one that probably got some college units or a high school diploma. So,
right.
So when I say break that cycle, it also go back to the key terms of what you were saying. It's choices. Some people, believe it or not, and we could say some people, what we call common sense is not common. Like you, it might sound crazy to a lot of people. Common sense not common. So what's common to you might not be common to me. So it's not about. Sometimes you'll say, oh, well, you know not to burn that. You know what they say. A soft hard behind or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
A soft behind. Remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in the catchphrase is, some people, like you say, had them choices, but some people lack the knowledge of when you make. Now you might know if you touch that fire, yeah, it's gonna burn your hand, but you don't know if you touch that fire, it might not only burn your hand, it might catch your clothes and burn everything. So you might have a little knowledge of what might happen, but some people be willing to take that risk until they get into it. And like you said, it's that choice. But some people don't wait to know the whole knowledge of that. You
right.
probably in life and took as a man that's 51 years old. I take it in life. You have made choices. After you make that choice, like, damn, I don't believe I did that. I knew it was some kind of repercussions, but I didn't think it was going to be this far. And that's how it be sometimes, even with
right.
certain choices that we make.
But even at a young age, like I said, like I agree with this. Everyone is different. But even at a young age for myself, my mentality was on one thing. That was to make money and never do anything to be disrespectful to my mother or my father, because I was instilled with values. But at the end of the day, regardless if you grew up in a one-parent or two-parent home, you still have the final choice and decision on what the path
right,
that you choose in your life.
Not to cut you off, but let me ask you this. So what
okay.
about the kids that's growing up and they only thoughts, you said your thoughts was to make money and respect your elderly, right? Ain't
absolutely.
So what
absolutely.
About the kids coming up in today's society and they only thoughts is to be in the streets, to gang bang and do what the street life, street life.
Good question. I can respond to that very
so
easily.
You gotta understand, like, what to make a long story short, like, the more what I'm getting at is, the reason why a lot of these schools and a lot of these different, let's say, charter schools and at-risk programs call me in, because not only is I'm these guys' ages, I could adapt to, okay, I see where you're coming from. Now you see all these guys, your mom at work busting her butt at work because she needs to keep this roof over your head. You come home from school, your only guidance is this YouTube, your only guidance is this TV, your only guidance is this radio. Now you listen to this, you think this is life. Ooh, they got big guns. Oh, I need a big gun. Ooh, they got a lot of money. Oh, how they getting it? They said they slapping the girl, they taking the money, they robbing the bank. And guess what? Guess what you just filled in your head? Oh, I need to get me a gun. I need to go snap me a girl. I need to go rob me a bank. And you got to be able to think, even though as an elder, as an elderly man, you still could come with the concept of when you came up for a two-parent household. Like I told you, it was the generation gap. Now you got to think about to reach these kids. Now you got to think about the gap that they living in and who you competing against that they idolizing.
I definitely understand it, and I can relate because I know you have other callers calling. I will say this. Right now, it is imperative, and it is much tougher for a parent to make sure that you are invested in your child or your children's upbringing, because we all have to work, we all have to survive, we do the best that we can as a parent or parents to make sure that we are able to provide a great education for our children and giving them the best opportunity that they could possibly have to strive in this society. So that means as a parent, you're going to have to put in the extra work to make sure that you're involved in every aspect of your child or your children's life. As you said, you have YouTube, you have social media. So that means you're going to have to sit up and go that extra mile and monitor everything that they're doing. I rather for my son to say, Dad, God, you are just being so nosy. What are you doing? I rather for him to say that, because then I can look back when he turns 22, 23 years old and he's an adult and he has his own family. You know what, Dad? I really appreciate you being involved in my life and really taking that initiative to find out who my friends are, who I'm hanging out with, and what I'm watching on TV or either on videos. That's the problem right there.
Okay,
you have to
okay,
make the time.
I'm not, okay, that's like a 50-50, because now what if I tell you, with me being caught up in the street life, I know people from certain gangs who, my Selly, for example, he about to come home after doing 30 years. His mom, a lawyer. His dad, a lawyer. His auntie, doctors, and all that. And guess what? They was on him like right on rice, and he rebelled and ended up getting all that time. What happened is, like I told you, sometimes you a lot of parents, especially nowadays, a lot of parents is against their child being rappers or against their, I want you to do this, I want, and you'll force your child, and you probably don't understand this, what I'm saying. Like, we call it the shelter mode. You can shelter your child for only so long, where this child decides he want to be what he want to be in life. And that's just, you could be the best parent and you could be the strictest parent. Wherever you want to be, you can be that. It's that child's decision. It's like you had your decision on what you want to be in life. If your dad was a reverend, you decide you wanted to be a reverend, that was on you. But if you decide you want to be a doctor, that was you on you. And it's a point in a child, it's a point in time in a boy's life or a man's a child's life where he go through that identity where he's trying to find himself.
Well, that's natural. And the only thing you can do as a parent is to encourage your child, be supportive of your child, but more importantly, keep the lines of communication open. Where we fall short is that when we don't keep the lines of communication open and we're not supporting, if we're not supportive of our child or our children, of course they're going to rebel. Regardless if you have two parents in the household, you give them the best education, you may love them to death, you put them in the best neighborhoods, if you are not supportive of their dreams, 9 times out of 10, they're going to rebel. But at the same time, I have enough faith in a lot of our kids out there that are very intelligent. They know the difference and say, hey, look, I see how the game is being set up. Let me take advantage of the system to make myself a better person instead of being a statistic. I just want all of us as a culture, as a people, to stop putting so much emphasis and blaming Anglo-Saxon people for all our problems. The murders that are taking place in these inner cities like Chicago. This is not law enforcement that's coming in Chicago that are killing people. This is black-on-black crime in South Central Los Angeles, where I grew up at. It wasn't Daryl Gates and law enforcement coming into Compton, Linwood, Inglewood, South Central Los Angeles. Wasn't law enforcement. These were black gang members killing black gang members, killing black people, innocent family members walking down the street, being in the front yard playing in the yard. Kids' lives are being taken from them, not by white people, but our own people.
I'm not in disagreement about the cancer that's spreading over the black community in the inner cities. I'm not disagreeing with that, right? But the whole thing about it, the cancer has been laid. The only thing we can try to do is one child at a time is try to save them and show them something different, because the cancer, at the end of the day, all it's doing is just is multiplying. It's multiplying. So it's going to take one child at a time to try to change it back over. This didn't happen. This didn't, the black family ain't didn't come single mothers and from a double parent household to just single mothers or a one parent household just over time. It took years. So it's going to take years to get that cancer back up out you.
I totally agree.
Out of us.
I totally agree. But again, I appreciate everything that you are attempting to do. As long as you stay positive and keep striving for the best. I applaud you, brother. Butterfly, thank you so much for taking my call, and I wish all of you a very pleasant evening.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for calling in.
All right. God bless.
Wonderful, wonderful. Great conversation. That was a great conversation. You know, a lot of people have those questions, and so that was a great conversation and dialogue
to have.
Like,
that's what I'm saying. I like dialogue like that. I like dialogue with people just seeing different views and point of views and understanding.
Right.
You know, just
absolutely
different. See, like when I was caught up in the game, we used to call like just regular people like civilians, and we used to say a civilian never understands the mind frame of a gangster. And I believe a gangster never understands the mind frame of a civilian. But then again, in reality, if we combine them two in dialogue and encourage the gift of understanding, like you said, communication, we'll win. And that's just what I came into.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I loved it. And of course tonight also we can't forget about all of the amazing books that you wrote. So when was that moment that you decide, you know what, I want to be a writer? And not only do I want to be a writer, but I want to put some of these writings into a book so that people all over can read them.
Well, truly, like I told you, I was in the SHU. I was in Pelican Bay SHU in California prison. It's like used to be like one of the worst prisons you could be in. And then I was in the SHU.
Wow.
I was in solitary confinement, segregated housing, as they call it. And I decided, like, at that time, I think I was like 17, and I was telling myself, like, man, I don't want to live this shit. Like, this not the life I want to live. Like, life gotta be better than this. Life got to be, I've been in this cell since I was 14, and I'm not telling when I'm going to get out, and it got to be better than this. So I decided, like I say, I didn't have nothing else to do. So I was reading a lot of books, and a lot of books was coming from the East Coast, and the books was talking about, like, certain inner city going-ons out there, what's happening within the drug trades, and, oh, you got this big baller, he married this pretty fatigue woman, black woman, and all that, and, you know, and all the stuff that come with that. So I decided, like, I said, like, man, this not the life. Like, we live a different life over here. We out here fighting over colors. We out here, you know, we gangbanging. And I want to show kids, like I said, everything glitter that go. Like, you could pick up my book, and you might think I'm glamorizing the lifestyle of red and blue or shoot 'em up, bang, bang. But at the end of the day, none of my characters don't change, like my granny used to tell me when I was coming up and trying to game, it's only going to be two solutions. You're either going to be in jail, or you're going to be on a prison yard or a graveyard at an early age.
Right.
And that's where my characters too. So my characters don't redeem themselves and try something new. That's what happens. So I don't glamorize the street life. I just speak what's going on in the street life. So I decided to give my point of view. And while I was doing it, while I was just writing, it was just something like, oh man, I could pass time. Like, I got 5 years in here to do it. And by the time I looked up, when I started writing, I was like, dang, man, a month went by. This is my first time being in prison where a month went by and it seemed like one day. I said, wow. Like, I got something to keep my attention going, and it's something positive. So by the time I looked up, I was in the SHU 5 years and I had 20 books I wrote. It was like, damn, I did more harder time being on mainline. The 5 years on the mainline, that seemed like was harder time. And the solitary confinement time supposed to have been harder than being on mainline, because I couldn't call home. I couldn't go to the yard. I couldn't go work out. All I could do was sit in the cell, in a small cell, no bigger than an 8x8 with just a toilet and a sink.
Mm.
So it was like I was elsewhere. I wasn't in prison. And that's where writing became my passion.
Right.
Wow. And once again, you guys, we are on with author Terry Roten, you guys. And if you're on the line, you got a question or comment, go ahead and press 1. Or if you're out there, you can call in. The number is 347-326-9139. All you have to do is press 1, and it'll allow you to come on and join us on the line here, you guys. And so we've been talking about his journey through incarceration to now, you know, being an entrepreneur, being out here and not only creating greatness for himself but for other people. And so, Terry, for you, I'm always seeing you, you know, out here like, hey, who you know, basically who wants to initiate their dream today? You know, you're always asking people who wants to be an author, who has a story to tell. Why is it so important you to help others, you know, aspire and get to their dreams that they have of telling their own personal stories?
Well, one of the main reasons is because, like, at first I didn't have nobody to help me. Like, I reached out to so many people, like, and I just knew, like, I got my own fingerprints. I got my own story to tell. And then, like, I just reached out, and then, like, I just kept reaching out. So at that time, it was harder to get published because it wasn't like how it is now with ebooks and stuff like that. You have to go through, like, mainstream and, like, get your book, like, sent out, you know, send out what they call, what we call, like, the review, like a submission. So I had to send out a lot of submissions and stuff like that and got rejected. Being in prison, I got rejected. I spent over, like, thousands of dollars just buying stuff just to send out review copies and chapters to different publishers that I thought would pick me up after getting rejected. So then, like, it was at one point in time, I'm like, man, I used to cuss, like, man, this shit ain't for me. Like, gangbanging is my lifestyle. This is where I'm going to be at. Like, I'm going to make a lot of money, because I used to make money in the streets, too. Like, so before the book game, like, I used to make a lot of money in the streets. But like I said, I wasn't glamorizing, because the money I made in the streets, I probably made more than a McDonald's worker within 1 year. But the time that I ended up doing, the 10.5 years, like, the turtle always catching up to the rabbit eventually. That McDonald's worker, now he's manager, now he probably owns a McDonald's, now he's making more money than me. But I didn't think like that. I was thinking like, dang, I just made $400,000 to $500,000 this year just on the street, just grinding. And so I had to really tell myself, like this is what I want, keep pushing. So Quan ended up giving me a chance. And then I start having a lot of other major publishers want to get behind me and stuff like that. Whereas I decided, I said, No Breaks is taking off so good, and I do a lot of giving back, and a lot of people hit me up telling me they have a story, and a lot of people hit me up saying how do they start writing and stuff like that. So one part of me giving back, like, I could go give back and go give turkey drive, toy drives, and stuff like I'll be doing. But, like, giving back is part of, like, putting people on in the web. Me giving back, I'm not just saying I'm just giving back, just picking authors up, because it's a win-win situation if I feel a person really driving, a really person got ambition, because, like, my publishing company is going to also win from it, too. But in the process of giving back, it's still helping and motivating and showing, like, look, you can do whatever you put your mind to. You can do whatever you put your mind to, as long as, because sometimes it ain't who you are, it's who you know. And I just signed a few, like, just doing that, I just signed a few, I believe, talented authors, and I believe, like, under my guidance, and if they, like you say, stay level-headed and stay consistent and stay grind, they're going to be doing the same thing. Like, it's like each one teach one, and together we all grow, so.
Absolutely. And of course, for you, just in December, you release To Live and Die in LA Part 2, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. Tell the folks out there a little bit about To Live and Die in LA. What kind of take place in the stories, and what kind of characters are we going to meet?
Well, in To Live and Die in LA, It's like I said, it's 85% based on my life story, and the main character is named D Bastard. And the Bastard part comes from, as I told y'all, about a crew I started within my gang called the Taino Bastards. So D Bastard was the main character, and at a young age, he get caught up in the street life, and at a young age, he go to prison, something similar to my story. Within that time in prison, he decide he want to be an author, like I say, something similar to my story. And within that time, he's struggling just to do right. Like he, without giving a story, DB, as they call in the story, he called for short, he's struggling to live right. Like he's struggling to be an author because that's his ultimate dream is to be an author. But the streets don't, the streets in LA, you either live right or die trying. So it's like to living down LA where basically like this young man, he's trying to really live right, but he also get his alter ego, or however you want to call it, is always luring him back into a life that he don't want to live. And he also, he just fighting temptation. It's just the battle of temptation. It's the battle of love and happiness. He got a woman that he want to be with. And it's just different obstacles. This is all just so like trials and tribulations a young black man go through to live right in society in the streets of Los Angeles.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And incredible books, you guys. And so tell the folks out there where they can go to actually purchase your books.
It matter what state you're in, like most you get from any bookstore. You can also online, you know, the biggest online bookstore, Amazon. You get them on Kindle. You get them if you got the Unlimited, you get the Unlimited. Also, you can hit me up. We hit my website up too, but I got my own bookstores out here in Los Angeles. So if you guys are ever in Los Angeles, you can come to one of my bookstores. And just
nice.
Hit me up. I'll send out signed copies and stuff like that too.
Wonderful, 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 wonderful. And I know we have a lot of aspiring authors and writers who are interested. So what's the process as far as how people, what they need to do if they want to come to you about getting their books published?
You know, the industry has changed so much. So for 2017, what I was doing is they started a challenge. It was Start Story Challenge. And I was looking at authors myself. And I was just, you know, looking at them. But in reality, that our normal guidelines and stipulations is if you want to be a writer, come to No Breaks, you have to submit an inquiry letter about yourself, a synopsis about the manuscript you're submitting, and your first 3 to 5 chapters. And you just have to send that to, you. Matter of fact, cause I don't know our email, but you could still send it to me, which is nobreakceo@gmail.com. Or you could just hit me up on Facebook or anything saying you want a submission. What's the guidelines to make it easier on you? And all my social media is Cherry Rosen.
Wonderful. And of course it's 2017, and so I know that you have a lot more books to crank out. So what you got in store next for the readers coming up in 2017?
Well, next for the readers, like I got a really like I'm releasing a book on Valentine's called When Falling for a Real One myself. But right now, like the whole I'm catering like most of this year to my authors, like everybody that signed to No Breaks. So like we're gonna release a few books like from authors like Bree Renee. We got Al Tariq Gadsden. We got Karen Dixon. We got Gloria Willer. We got Kelly Jackson and her husband, Marcus. We got the Mitchells, their husband and wife. They kind of remind me of A and J. I think they might be the next Ashley Jacquez, their husband and wife.
Oh, wow.
We got Tanika Turner. We got NS. Like, we also got our executive publisher, Kool-Aid. He's going to be releasing a couple of books, too. His name is Benny Cool. So that's right now I'm just dedicating, like, all my time to my authors right now. I'm still working on a few books myself, but To Living Down LA is still new, so I don't want to say no releases for me. I want everybody to go out there and support and
awesome.
Top To Living Down LA Part 2.
Absolutely.
If you haven't read Part 1.
Awesome. That is awesome, 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 awesome. And so at the end of the day, you know, through your journey of the things that you have been through and where you are now, what are the ultimate goals that you have set for yourself?
Well, my ultimate goal is just to really to be featured in within the publishing industry where people feel they could call me and they could look up to me and say, like, Cherry left a legacy behind within this industry, and also where I done reached back and connected with so many people and helped so many people, whereas, like, my legacy don't go surpass, whereas saying, like, like I helped, like I was a giver because it's so much that took and I have taken so much and did so much negative. Like I don't feel like I need to do positive. I need to show my kids differently. So that's the whole thing. So my ultimate goal is just to be able to sit somewhere and probably my book's still selling or I didn't build a catalog of authors or catalog of just completely publishing reps or whatever and just sit back and say I did that. Like I really contribute. I really gave some positive attribute into this industry, into what I have got going.
Wonderful. Awesome. That is awesome. And I definitely think you are going to achieve everything that you have set for you. As Reginald said, a caller earlier in the show, you definitely are very intelligent, very goal-oriented, and I just love your vibe for getting out here and helping other people. You know, it's one thing for us to get to where we are in life and trying to build our empire, and it's another thing to reach back and help others, you know, build their empires and make their dreams happen. So I think that is phenomenal, and definitely commend you on just getting out here and doing your thing and making changes for the better, not for only for you, but for your kids, you know, growing up and in these different times and so forth. So that is definitely to be commended.
Thank you. Thank you. Another thing like this with books and stuff, because I got like, Deneen, like Jolly, she like do my typing, and like I'm showing her like, look, this a field you go into, you can do editing. You went to college, you're a teacher, different stuff. You could take from that. So it's not just because you're a person off the street. I like you. Like I got a lot of different people that I never meet personally. I went to college, but it's still people who work for me that went to college and got degrees and stuff like that. So it's just not about just giving back to what they call the probably less fortunate or that. So I wouldn't even say any of my authors are the less fortunate, but what I'm getting at is I just want to be like a staple of a positive influence like right now in my life.
Absolutely.
That's what I feel like, because I believe in the universe of attraction. If you think positive results going to follow. If you think negative results going to follow. What you put into the universe return that. So if I'm pushing out into the universe positivity 9 times out of 10, I might get some negative energies carrying because I'm going to mix the bitter with the sweet, but positivity going to continue to come my way, and I'm absorbing it and keep shooting it back out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. Well said.
That's the real goal right now. Like you said, like I'll post like any authors and if I off the batch, if I get a couple that I see is real serious, and see that's the whole thing. A lot of authors come into the industry, or a lot of people see of me, or like people within the industry are like, oh, they make a lot of money. That's a get rich easy scheme. Mm-hmm. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, whereas it's like a hustle. And it's a hustle, it's a job. And it's like sometimes you still gotta keep your regular job for your job that you're working, but you gotta know how to grind it out. You gotta know how to have 2 jobs. Because it'll pay off in the end, but a lot of people will look at you and they'll see the shine but don't see the grind. And that's most what it is. Like I named a few of my new authors, but I still got like Stanley James from out of Long Beach, and I got Latrice. Like I got different people that I didn't name, but on the same token, like I'm building a big roster. Whereas we a family, and whereas we all eating and we all understanding, we kicking positivity in the world. Because I look at it like this: if I bring an author in, and later on down the line that author decides to do his own publishing company, and they bring an author in, and that author becomes like the name J.K. Rowling or something, guess what? I contribute to that.
Right. Absolutely.
I contributed to that. Absolutely. So that's how I look at it. Like sometimes it ain't just about me. So I mean, I'm gonna be releasing some books this year, but I ain't setting no dates. I'm setting dates for my authors. But like I said, right now that's really buzzing for me right now. And I need to just keep pushing to Living Dollar Part 2, and I need to keep growing my authors and feel my authors probably online and listening and stuff. And I just want them to know, and anybody else knowing that soon to aspire to be authors. Like one thing about life. You get what you put out. One thing about life, if you think it, you can achieve it. One thing about life, like Reginald said earlier, it's choices. If it's your choice, this is what you want to do, you got to stick to that choice and ride that choice out.
Right.
Like, you can't rattle the head. So another thing about life is you got to stand on what you believe in. If you believe this is you and this is what you want, you're going to stand on it, you're going to believe on it, and you're going to ride it out. and you're going to work till you achieve.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great advice for the authors. And once again, tell the folks how they can go about as far as connecting with you on social media.
Well, like I said, all my social medias is my name, Terry Roten, TerryWroten. So at Facebook, you can find me at TerryWroten. Now, you might find a few different pages, but you're going to see, like, my book cover, To Live in LA Part 2. I got another page, it's Terry L. Roten, just with the L in a minute. That's my second page because my Facebook got so many followers from my first page, I had to open up another page. And then, like, I got Instagram, it's the same thing, at Terry Roten, all together, TerryWroten. That's also my Twitter and Snapchat and all the other social media outlets. And then you're on Amazon and just looking for Terry, it's Terry Roten. You can search it, and my author page and all that stuff will pop up too.
Awesome.
On Facebook, you could if you can't get in contact with me, you could go to our publishing page, our like page, and just notify us at No Breaks Publishing. It'll get to me if I don't get the message. My executive publisher, Beanie Cools, will get it, or somebody within my company will get it, and the message will get to me. So it's just anything No Breaks, you can find me.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you for allowing me to delve into your life and all that great stuff this evening. It has really been an eye-opening experience, and I've definitely learned a lot talking with you this evening. And I'm looking forward to all of the great things that you have in store and your authors have in store, as well as your No Breaks Publishing has in store for this year. And I'm just looking forward to see everybody on your team do great things. And I definitely hope that you'll come back again and hang out with me.
Yeah, hopefully, like I say, my authors do kind of good. You probably see one of them, and you probably want to bring one or two of them or three of them on here. You know, this is a great outlet, and I want to thank you for having me on here in this platform, because, like I say, it's hard for us authors really to get our own platforms and people to see, because, you know, to a lot of people, if it don't got nothing to do with the negative outlets and all that stuff with the I'm not gonna knock on nothing, but you know, it's kind of feel like writers, we already have it hard, so we have to band together.
Yeah.
And when we get outlets like this, I applaud and I respect everyone who's given us a platform to even elaborate on what we have going and different things like that to tell our truths and our stories and to be heard.
Absolutely. Definitely my pleasure. And once again, thank you for coming on here. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and I'll be talking with you again real soon.
All right. Thank you, Bianca. Thank you for having me.
All right. You're welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Awesome, you guys. That was author Terry Roten, you guys, author of To Live and Die in L.A., parts one and part two. And awesome gentleman. And you guys go and support him and No Breaks Publishing. And I will be sure to put the information on the Beautiful Butterfly Show page so you guys can go check him out, support him, and the things that he is doing, you guys. That's how everybody, you know, works in this thing cohesively. Supporting one another, encouraging one another, building one another up. And so big shouts out to Terry for that wonderful interview this evening, you guys. And we're going to be coming back on Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're going to have author Cordelia Michelson on. Cordelia Michelson is a romance novelist, so we're going to switch gears a little bit on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But once again, thank you to all of the callers on the line listening. I know a lot of folks are getting off of work and driving, so we definitely appreciate you guys tuning in, to the callers that called in. We appreciate you as well, and to Terry for being so open and so transparent transparent about his life and what he's learned, and just seeing his growth now is absolutely amazing. So you guys make sure you go and connect with him on social media as well. So, folks, we're going to get ready to get out of here, but I hope I see you guys on Thursday, same time, same place. I am Bianca Fly, and thank you for tuning in to the Beautiful Butterfly Radio Show. We'll see you next time.
Somebody needs to do a song for L.A.
Straight up. Just
a shout. Go out to L.A.
Uh-oh,
new anthem. Look down to live and die in L.A. California. What you say about Los Angeles? You're the only place for me.
It never rains. To live and die in L.A. Where every day we try to fatten our pockets. Us niggas hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing coming to chase it. Worldwide through the hard times, worrying faces. Shed tears as we bury niggas close to heart. But what's a friend that was ghost in the dark? Cold part about it. Nigga got smoked by a bean. Trying to floss on a blind to a broken man's dream. A hard lesson. Court cases keeping guessing. Flea barking ain't an option now, so I'm stressing. Cost more to be free than a life in the pen. Making money off of cuss words, writing again. Learn how to think ahead, so I fight with my pen. Late night, damn sunset, like in the sin. What's the worst they can do to a nigga? Got me lost in hell. To live and die in the lake on bears, my man. No stranger, full of drama like a soap opera. On the curb, watching the ghetto bird helicopters. I observed so many niggas getting three strikes, tossed in jail. I swear to be right across from hell. I can't cry, cause it's home now. I'm just a nigga on his own now. Living like thug staff, so I can't smile right into my peoples when they ask for pictures. Thinking Cali just fun and bitches. Better learn about the dress code, B's and Z's. All them other niggas copycats, D's and G's. I love Cali like I love women. Cause every nigga in L.A. got a little bit of thug in him. We might fight amongst each other, but I promise you this. We'll burn this bitch down, get us pissed. To live and die in L.A. For 92.3, 106, all the radio stations that be bumping my shit, making my shit sound quadruple, quadruple platinum. Let's go out to all the magazines that support a nigga, all the real motherfuckers, all the stores, the mom and pop spots, A&R people, all y'all motherfuckers. L.A., California love fart motherfucker too, without gay ass drink.
Beautiful Butterfly Show would like to thank you for tuning in. Please be sure to follow us on Instagram. That's at Instagram.com/ The Beautiful Butterfly Show. Also on Facebook.com/ The Beautiful Butterfly Show. And last but certainly not least, you can also catch up with us on Twitter. That's at Twitter.com/ The Beautiful Butterfly Show. And thank you once again for tuning in on behalf of the Vibration Radio Network.